We were walking. We were around 13,000 feet elevation. We were on a ledge, walking between Gorakshep and Kumjum, which is where the Sir Edmund Hillary School is. So we were heading to the school, and the ledge was roughly a meter wide, and we'd stopped to take a photo. And that day had been a complete snowstorm, no visibility, very, very cold. And as we were stood on the ledge for the first time that day, the kind of cloud cover cleared, and we could see for the first time the next valley in the distance. And as we kind of stood there observing the valley, my bag that I'd put down suddenly fell on the floor for no reason. And I remember thinking to myself, that's really strange. So I picked up the bag and I put it back on this rock. And then suddenly the dogs in the distance and the valley in front of us, as the sound obviously carried perfectly because there's nothing. So these dogs just kicked off, just started going crazy. And then suddenly we heard these screams from people, and I remember just thinking in a split second, what is going on? And they had obviously felt the wave of the force of the earthquake before us, and then it suddenly hit us, came through the mountain and just slammed us, and everything just in that second kind of descended into chaos, and instinct kicked in, and you know, I realized quite quickly, oh my God, we're in an earthquake. And we need to survive this, because where we were was very open and very exposed, and the rocks, you know, started avalanching from the mountain. So we hit the floor, and time kind of went very strange, and I'm not sure how long it lasted, but at some point it stopped, and then this crazy smell of the earth, of this sulfur, of this burning hits you, and the realization that you've survived an earthquake kicks in. And then the afterthought for me was of the aftershocks. I knew that there was more coming, and we were on the side of a mountain, you know, completely isolated, and no one knew where we were, and there's rocks still sliding and falling everywhere, and people, you know, you can hear the people in the distance still screaming as their houses have been demolished, or you know, or life has been lost. And so we stuck it out on the ledge, and other people started to arrive very shaken, very messy. An old woman was the first person to get to us, and she was in tears, and she was asking us what had happened, and we were trying to explain to the guide we had that it was an earthquake and we needed to stay safe because there will be more aftershocks coming, and you know, we weren't sure if that was a minute or an hour. But so we sat it out on the ledge, waited for the first aftershock, which was also quite big, and then we decided we needed to make it to lower ground and get to the nearest village, which is a place called Namche Bazaar. So we eventually, when we left the ledge we were on, we walked around a blind corner, and literally 15 to 20 seconds in front of where we were, had we not stopped, we would have been in serious trouble, because the path in front of us was completely gone, completely swept away. The rocks, the landslide, rock slide, avalanche had just completely taken it out. There was nothing, there was no path anymore. So that was pretty scary. So we managed to kind of circumnavigate that, and then literally became this run to the nearest town, firstly to Kumjung, and then later that day to Namche Bazaar, we knew there was an army base there. And just to try and get some information, you know. And at that point, we didn't know what had happened. We kind of worked out that if we felt it, that we'd been hit that hard where we were, that potentially lower down was really, really bad. So anyway, we get to Namche Bazaar. We end up, you know, there's no comms, there's no electricity. The whole place is a mess. And then the next day we managed to go lower again to Lukla, eventually after a few days get back down to Kathmandu, and really saw the devastation firsthand in Kathmandu, saw some really horrible things there, in amongst the rubble, you know, the search and rescue guys trying to do their work, but there was a huge loss of life, huge destruction. You know, things that we take for granted, the water being, you know, at the turn of a tap, power being the flick of a switch, food being available when we're hungry, you know, cash in an ATM machine. None of these things exist anymore. We kind of, you know, without all those things, so you very much kind of have the clothes on your back, the money in your pocket. And it becomes this survival, this kind of, you know, instinct of survival. And then we realize quite quickly that, that, you know, the beautiful Nepalese people needed as much help as possible, because we were witness to some of the NGOs and the aid workers kind of being paralyzed in a way due to corruption and organizational inefficiency, where the aid wasn't getting out of the airport or wasn't getting across borders, or they weren't, you know, certain groups weren't having permits and permissions to operate when they first arrived. So my friend and I, who I'd been traveling with, we decided to start a collection and we did a GoFundMe campaign. We just raised, as of this morning, £31,000.
Amazing.
And we partnered with a local group we'd met there, called the Nepal Relief Center. And we have spent the last 2 weeks buying rice, buying tents, medical supplies, getting trucks, and it's a real problem to get drivers and transportation because the infrastructure, some of the roads are now gone. So a lot of the remote regions haven't had any aid at all. So earlier this week, on Monday and Tuesday, we had a police escort and a convoy of 5 trucks and about 20 volunteers, and we drove out to the Dholka district, and we dropped 30 tons of rice to people that were extremely hungry, as you can imagine, after a week kind of cut off from the world. And we set up a pop-up medical center. We had a volunteer doctor treat some of the survivors, and we provided shelter for people who've been, you know, since the disaster, sleeping outside, very cold, and that, you know, the weather in some places had turned, so the rains were prevalent, and so very, very challenging conditions for people who already had very little compared to what we're used to and now have nothing at all. So very humbling experience, and I'm actually honored in a way to have been there and to be able to now help. And the support, you know, I've experienced from friends and family and workmates and random donations has just been incredible.
Yeah, I mean, have you taken it all in? Because this journey is amazing. You're there on a trek and you're caught in the earthquake, and now you're actually helping firsthand to try and resolve the problem. It's just incredible.
No, it truly is. And actually, only getting back here, back to Wales, yesterday, as for the first time, I'm just starting to assimilate really the experience, you know, just starting to rest again, be able to sleep again, be able to eat properly again. And as I'm kind of giving myself that space, to take it all in, it's a process. It's interesting. We had a very good sense that, you know, that we were the lucky ones, you know, very quickly before we even got down to the lower ground and seen the destruction. We were very aware that we'd been, you know, we were the lucky ones and we'd survived an earthquake.
But nothing really prepared you for the devastation that was in Kathmandu?
No, nothing. I mean, you know, those kind of built up, those urban areas. And even to the point where, I mean, when I left a few days ago, there were still a few tremors a day. You know, we were still sleeping with windows open on the ground floor. Lots of the locals are still too scared to go inside their own houses, even the houses that survived it. The locals just are expecting another wave, or they're just, you know, they're living in this fear paralysis. And I know, you know, of several people who are sleeping in their cars or sleeping outside their houses. And that's the way of it. There was this huge, huge sense of fear, and no one knows what, you know, if it will come again. And I think when you go through an experience like that, that's just so left field and so out of the blue. You know, I thought when I thought my biggest challenge was going to be Everest Base Camp. I didn't ever think that that would be the easy part of the experience and the journey in a way, you know, and that this earthquake would affect us and affect a country so beautiful and so open and pure. And these people are some of the most amazing people I've come across on the planet. You know, I travel all around the world, and I'm very lucky that I've had exposure to lots of cultures and countries. And Nepal for me is a place that I, you know, will always be a part of me now, will always be in my heart. And I feel really compelled through what we've done with the Acts of Kindness Collective, that we're taking donations, that we can really, really make a difference on the grassroots level to people who need the aid most, you know, and we're actually directly putting it into their hands, which is a hugely rewarding experience.
It must be incredibly frustrating knowing there are these people still displaced in villages that haven't even seen any aid yet.
Very frustrating. So my partner in the Acts of Kindness Collective, he yesterday went to a village that I have received no aid. Of the 1,400 houses in the village, only 7 remain standing. So all the other villagers have been sleeping outside now for 2 weeks, you know, in very hard conditions, very cold at night because of the altitude. 113 dead, you know, often bodies aren't cleared. So the smell of death, as it were, in the air is very palpable. And obviously the risk of disease now. You know, just before I left, the government issued a decree to start burning all bodies that were uncollected. And, you know, obviously search and rescue have kind of finished their urgency in pulling out survivors now. So if I saw, I mean, tons of buildings that had bodies remaining in them that are now just left because they don't have the resource or the manpower or the efficiency to clear them quick enough. So, you know, they become these kind of temporary tombs in a way. So it's a very, it's an environment that, you know, that we would never, we have no experience of. It's so alien to what we're used to, the way we live. And as I said, you know, very, very humbling. And to see, and for me, you know, as much as I can talk about the dark side of it all and the destruction and the death and you know, the kind of poverty of the situation, I think the real narrative for me is the resilience of the human spirit. And, you know, I saw time and time again kind of, you know, people reaching out to other people in times of need and just this outpouring of help and love, really, and wanting to do something for those, you know, who are suffering right now.
You can see the gratitude in their faces.
Yeah, I mean, there are moments. I mean, that said, yes, you of course you can, and you know, the people are hugely grateful, and you know, people are desperate too, because obviously, you know, a week on without kind of water and shelter and food is extraordinarily difficult for any human being. And the desperation we saw, you know, there were times where we saw isolated desperation, especially as we were going out into the villages, and we were, you know, the convoy we had. And we did come across people who were kind of hostile to us in a way. Mm. But you understand that because it comes from a point of complete and utter of desperation. And so when you actually then get the aid to the destination, to the villages, and you know, we were working with the chief elders to distribute, and you just see, you know, the kids, I mean, they show it, and we took lollipops and that kind of stuff. So you know, the interaction with the kids, and then obviously the adults who have just been cut off completely, is life changing for all those involved, you know, for the people receiving and for all the volunteers who are doing the work to get it there. It's you have this real sense of purpose and this real sense of achievement, and again, it gives you perspective like I've never had in my life before, you know, to be grateful at all times for what we have, you know, because it's as much as we can get, we can kind of disconnect from other people's lives. It is still going on out there, and you know, it's everyone who's been in Nepal was so, I met time and time again other travelers, other trekkers, other climbers, you know, other people on their journey that just were so taken by the Nepalese people and so taken by the magnificent landscape that is Nepal that it, you know, just becomes almost like this sense of duty now that, okay, how do we return that? You know, how do we help? What do we do?
So what is next? Are you heading back soon or?
So I'm continuing to try and raise funds and donations for our Acts of Kindness collective. Talking to the rest of the team that are still on the ground daily, and we're looking at various different projects that we want to get involved with, either, you know, through our donation of time or through our donation of funds. And there's a couple of villages we've identified that have been completely demolished that we want to try and work closely with over the next few months to help rebuild them. And just do what we can really to help off, you know, help the Nepalese people get back to